All right, this is Mr. Rowe, and I don't spend a lot of time on the mic in our CHS podcasting class, but today I am on the mic, and I wanted to do a show that I am calling Seth and Sophie Talk About Stuff. I just thought it would be interesting to sit down with a CHS student that has piqued my curiosity and pick her brain about some things that I think are interesting that are going on in the lives of young people today, but also things that still connect to me as an older guy. So this is the inaugural episode of Seth and Sophie Talk About Stuff. Sophie, it's good to have you here today.
Thanks for having me. A lot of pressure after you just said that.
Yes, you're representing your entire species.
Yeah, I really am.
Yeah.
My entire grade.
Your entire grade. Yeah. Let's start with that. So, you know, every high school kid is so unique and original. What are the things that you think you do have in common? Because, you know, you talk, obviously we're talking in jest, we talk about you representing your class and that sort of thing, but you are representative in a way, of course, that I could never be. So what are some of the things that you think you have in common?
That's really difficult. I also want to bring up one thing before I answer this. I think it's really cool because I've visited other high schools, and it's really weird when I meet students at other high schools that I can match perfectly the students that go here, like a copy, or like...
You're saying that there are something like stereotypes, if
absolutely.
You will, that exist at every school.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
Well, I mean, of course it's going to happen because, like, we always try to stereotype ourselves into a certain group just so that we have some sort of common understanding of each other.
Sure.
But it's really weird seeing it play a part in different high schools.
All right, so give me three stereotypes that we walk into any high school, you're going to get these three. And don't start with jock.
I was just about to start with
jock. Don't even begin with jock.
Okay. Band kids.
Okay. And what are the hallmark attributes? I'm walking into a strange high school. What's the hallmark attribute that immediately signals that I've got a band kid? And for, you know, we haven't started our vodcasting yet. So for our listening audience, she keeps looking at Kendall. I'm not sure if that's
because she's... Kendall Olivia. Olivia's playing a flute right now.
Okay. All right. There you go. So in the control room, we've got flute players.
We also have DJ.
And DJ is also.
Who is a band kid?
DJ is a band kid.
Or was, right? You were in band? Okay, kid in band.
Okay. Oh, is there a difference between a kid in band and a band
kid? Yeah, we have talked about this.
Oh, really?
Okay, so I think the stereotype that people will generally give band kids is they're just kind of, dang. Strange. Quirky.
Okay, and these are band kids, whereas a kid in band
is just a kid who wants to play for the band.
Just a kid who plays in band. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about how much of our identity becomes enmeshed in the activities that we pursue. Mm-hmm. Like, again, you know, the prototypical stereotype is that jock kid who finds his identity in whatever sport he's participating in at the time, or she, for that matter. But we probably also have the same thing among our athletes, kids who participate but don't find their identity in that activity and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, that's one. We got band kid. Give me two more.
It's difficult because, like, I feel with these stereotypes, there's a lot of negative connotations that go along with them because you're stereotyping for a reason. So, okay, so obviously the kids that partake in illegal extracurricular activities. that's another one. That's a good one.
And you didn't say it on the mic, I think, but Kendall was mouthing stoner,
I think. I didn't know if I
was supposed to say that. Do we still use that term? Is that still a term?
Yeah.
It is, really. because that one's been around for a little while.
Stoner.
I was thinking about that the other day. In when I was in high school, the band Motley Crue, one of their big hits was actually a remake of a hit from the early 60s, and I forget the band that did it first, but one of Motley Crue's big hits was Smoking in the Boys' Room. And I remember thinking about that the other day, thinking about, you know, that how awkward and bad it would be if someone tried to remake that again today, except, of course, today it would be vaping in the boys' room, which just does not sound as cool.
Well, we can't say
that
for sure.
It's just not as cool. somehow that, and this is just a side note from Mr. Rowe, but I remember when I saw the first advertisement for what was then called an e-cigarette, mm-hmm. right, which has evolved into vaping today. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, that's the dumbest, lamest thing I've ever seen. That company is going to go broke. And I was wrong about that. But I think I figured out why I was wrong.
I think each generation has to have their own thing. So when, like, cigarettes was passed off, our generation had to pick up something new. And, like, they're flavored, which is, like, appealing to anybody. But also this morning I was walking out the bathroom and I saw Mr. Clevenger in the boys' bathroom talking to someone. No doubt they were caught vaping, and I was like, I couldn't catch him in the mirror or anything, and I
so they remain anonymous. That's probably just as well.
It is. It's a lot better. Yeah. But it kind of made me laugh.
After I was so wrong about the vaping, I went back because I don't like to be wrong, and so I went back and I assessed why I was wrong, and I came up with a better way of predicting what the next generation will adopt and that sort of thing. Because mm-hmm. as you said, every generation has to have their own thing and that sort of thing. And so I think I came up with three aspects of a new thing to judge whether or not the next generation will adopt it as something that they're going to, that's going to be a part of their sort of what they do. And one is the previous generation has to hate it, mm-hmm. whatever it is, right? Whether, you know, we're going to talk about music here in just a little bit, but whether it's music or whatever, the previous generation has to hate it. Two, it has to inhibit your ability to work alongside the previous generation, right? So, you know, so we make all these rules about, you know, you mentioned smoking is going mm-hmm. away and that sort of thing. So it has to do that. And then it has to be in some way personally harmful, right? It's got to be some way personally harmful. That's why I really do think the next generation, it's going to be face tattoos. I think that is the next big thing.
Okay, so we've moved tattoos away from drugs
to
tattoos.
Yeah, I think face tattoos will be the next big thing.
And it's going to work because our generation isn't going to like them.
Yes, I think even your generation will be like, that's... Yeah, that face. I don't know. How do we feel about who's my
person with face tattoos?
Jelly Roll, I know, right?
Post Malone.
Posty, he's my boy. So, how does your generation feel about that?
Well, if Post Malone is rocking it, then I'm on my way to get it too. So, catch me at school on Monday with the same exact face tattoos as Post Malone.
Great. Great. Okay.
No, well, I probably would never get a face tattoo, but I see no real, like, reason not to enjoy the, like, I don't know, Post Malone's are cool. They look good on him. I don't think they did at one point when he first got them, but then he like slimmed down. He did work with himself, and like I think he looks healthier and better. And so like the tattoos still being on his face just work now.
So do you know who Jelly Roll is?
Someone came into my work asking if I could find a CD of Jelly Roll.
Okay.
And I've never listened to
him. Well, he would be an interesting test case for what you just said, because he is not any of the things that you just said about Post Malone, so it'd be interesting for me to to get your take after the podcast. We'll have to take a look at Jelly Roll and see where you are on where I on that. But let's leave the last stereotype then and use this as our segue into music, since we're talking about two musicians. So what are you into? Let's start with that.
You've asked me this before, and I've said anything, and then you kind of like, well, what about country? Right. Try to like take apart, you know.
Because a lot of high schoolers believe that their musical tastes are eclectic, but we almost always find they're not quite as eclectic as they think. Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of country I can enjoy, but I'm not going to say it's like a genre that I frequently visit. I have like one playlist I've made with country songs, and it's like really generic. I really love rock music. I've always loved rock music. I like classical music a lot. And I'm not sure. I'm sure if you played anything, I would at least try to get invested in it and see artists that were similar to it to see if there was anything that piqued my interest and I found some sort of like value with the music, but I'm not sure.
Where does value come from for you personally when you're listening to music? What does that mean for you?
If I connect to it in some way, whether it be like the melody, the lyrics, the way it makes me feel, or if I can imagine a scenario to the song, because a lot of the times when I'm listening to music, I have to think of a scenario that goes with the music. And then that's usually how I make playlists as well, because I have a lot of playlists that are like zombie apocalypse playlists, because when the zombie apocalypse happens, this is the playlist that's going to be playing the entire time. You know, there's songs for like when I lose my best friend, when I find the cure, you know. Living Dead Girl is definitely on there by Rob Zombie, because it's a zombie apocalypse. You have to have that.
I read a book a number of years ago. It's been quite a while, but it was called Your Brain on Music, and it was a study that looked at fMRI images of the brain and the way the brain actually biologically and cognitively interacts with music. And a number of things that you said are kind of interesting in that the music connects us to very primitive parts of our brain. And, you know, like the amygdala, where we emotions tend to originate from and are stored and that sort of thing. But it also connects to the hippocampus, so places where memories are, so it connects us to memory. And then, of course, you talked about the story in music, and that's that prefrontal lobe, right, where we rationalize stories. And so I think that's really interesting that you talking about connecting to music, you hit on a number of things, right? Emotion and memory and then meaning and all those kinds of things. Those are all different ways that the brain is appreciating music, so I think that's kind of cool.
I have to say a quick thank you to Mrs. Allred. Thank you for teaching me what those words were, what those parts of my brain were.
All right. I like the shout out to Mrs. Allred. That's cool. Yeah. So in what context do you most of the time listen to music?
Oh, I have to constantly listen to music. Like, the context is that I'm awake and breathing. I'm listening to music. I can't go by my days without listening to music. If I don't have headphones, I feel miserable.
So one of the things that, I don't really want this to be a part of our conversation necessarily, but obviously one of the things that I see every day are headphones, right? Particularly ear pods and that sort of thing. And one of the questions I have, how many of those students that I see wearing ear pods do you think are listening to music? And then just briefly, because one of the things that happened to me today, so I was walking down the main hall here at Clearwater, and I said hi. I was greeting students and saying hi, and less than half of them acknowledged me. And I wonder how much of that has to do with the fact that the ubiquitous nature of headphones has also created an isolating space, even when we're in this in this public place where we're brushing shoulders and greeting each other.
That's really cool that you noticed that, because, like, I try to make it, I don't know, if I'm in the hallway and I'm walking down the hallway and I see a teacher waving or, like, greeting me, the first thing I do is, like, make sure I'm not listening to music.
Hmm.
Or make sure I can interact, because I really love the interaction. But on days where I'm not wanting to speak to anybody, the first thing I do is I put in my, like, headphones with a string, so, like, it's more noticeable that I'm wearing them.
So you're using your headphones not only as a self-isolating, but you're using visual cues mm-hmm. to tell the people around you, I'm in my own world.
Yeah. And it seems to work. If I, like, am walking in pretty fast, I'm looking, like, right where I'm going, and I have my headphones, no one really speaks to me. And that's really nice, because I can just get to my class.
Whoa.
But if I have, like, AirPods in, and I notice someone waving or whatever, the first thing I do is take it out. Or I don't listen to music during certain classes. Like, there's designated classes where I make sure I'm not listening to music. Your class is one of them. And my government class with Hampton is one of them, because I know there's, like, repercussions for listening to music. Not only from the teacher, but, like, I find your class really rewarding when I'm in it. So there's no reason I would want to block out the information that I get. And I, like, specifically listen to music when I know that there's a class that I can do that in, and I'm really lucky my senior year to be given so many classes where I can do nothing but, like, work on what I want and listen to music. My art class, I have to have music. I have a specific playlist for art, because it's, like, artistic music. I need to be in the mood to make art.
Man, I like that a lot.
I think a lot of, like, different music has so much power over what I'm ready to do.
I like that a lot.
Because, I don't know, there's certain songs or artists that I know will get me in the mood to create. And so, like,
Give us a couple, because that's really okay. Fascinating to me.
Gregory Alan Isakov, he makes amazing music. There's one that's called Second Chances. Let me think of another. Oh, on the days where I'm walking down the hall and I don't want to be talked to, it's like the singers who are women, who, I don't know, the playlist is called Insanity is Light Enlightenment, and it's like...
Say that one more time.
Insanity is the Enlightenment.
Insanity is the Enlightenment.
It's all of the women's rage music, like...
Is this a genre, women's rage?
Yeah.
For real?
It's like my rage against the world just because I have the right, because I'm a woman. That sounds bad when I say it out loud.
It sounds bad when you say it out loud.
Mm-hmm. But it's like Mitski, Lana Del Rey, Phoebe Bridgers.
I know Phoebe. Whoa, that's wild. Women's rage.
But it's like the silent one. It's not like rage. It's like, stick it to the man. It's like, this is it. This is so it goes or whatever, you know?
I think it's safe to say that the answer is no, I don't know.
It's okay.
There's a number of reasons for that, not the least of which I've never seen the world or experienced the world through that perspective. But I find that really interesting. I think there's a number of really complex things going on there. The way you describe the rage, and then compounded with the idea that you are specifically using your headphones and your music to isolate in a way that all feels very suppressive, which I think is really fascinating, can music that is experienced that way also be cathartic? Because that's one of the reasons I listen to music, is I find it to be such a healing thing for me, but it feels like that would be really difficult in the way you're consuming mm-hmm. this particular genre. What do you think?
I think that's an interesting topic, because we also brought up how some coping skills aren't coping, they're self-harm.
Ooh.
But it's like you don't realize it because that's how you're coping.
Sure.
And we brought up music because we're like, well, there's safe bets that, like, this is never going to be harmful. And we said music, but then we had to come to the realization that, like, music can also be harmful, depending on what the music is saying to you and how you feel when you listen to it. And I brought up that my, I feel fortunate because when I have a feeling or emotion, I can prolong that feeling or emotion just by simply listening to the music of that emotion more and more. So my happy moments, I can make them as long as I want, as long as I have the music.
Whoa.
That it makes me feel happy and safe.
Oh, that's really powerful.
But I can prolong the times I feel depressed or lonely just because I'm listening to that genre for an entire week. And I can't get out of, like, the loneliness because the next song is a sad song over and over and over again.
Whoa. I think, first of all, Sophie, I think that's really insightful, and that level of self-awareness that you've processed the different ways that you consume music and its impact is super cool. It also takes me back to one of the things that I really think has been lost because of the way you consume music, and that is probably the pinnacle of sharing music when I was in high school was the breakup mixtape. And I fear that the breakup mixtape, where you just go up to the girl who's just broken your heart in the hallway and you just hand her the cassette, yeah, and
I'm
say,
ready. I want someone to this give me is, one.
Yeah, right? And I fear that's gone now, that there's no avenue for the breakup mixtape to exist the way it used to. And I just feel like that's a real loss to your generation.
Oh, man, that is a real loss. But there's so many ways that I think we can come back from that because, okay, first of all, I have to give information of how much music is a part of my life, because me and my friend Olivia, who is sitting behind the counter right now, music impacts our lives so much, and we have found that we connect really well through just communicating with music. I have three different things to bring up with this.
Okay.
We have an app that by the end of the week, every night on Friday, it gives you a recap of every single song you listen to, or like your top artists, your top songs, and then the genre. It gives you a genre of the music you listen to. Like, it says something about you. Like, Olivia's is usually sipping tea in your sweater, feeling angsty, you know? And it's always like Midwesty, or like, I don't know, it's perfectly her. And then we have another friend who also is in on this, and then another app we have shows the exact song that person's listened to right then, and you can react to it. So, like, I'll open the ad or app, and it'll be like Olivia's listening to Boa, and I immediately can, like, say, like, yes, you know what I mean?
These companies are obviously not sponsors, but we should share the name of the apps.
Yeah,
because I think this is something that one of the other things that I told you I wanted to talk to you is about the way your generation consumes music, because it's really, really different, right? When when I started, like, my first experience with music that was mine was I probably would go back to when I was about 6 years old, and I would go get the album out of, you know, my mom and dad's cabinet, and I would put this album on. It was the first album I really connected to was a Carpenters album. And I would put the Carpenters album on, and I would go sit in the easy chair and just cry. And so that, you know, but I think that's so different because that was the album. And it wasn't practical to skip songs.
No.
It wasn't practical to listen to different artists at the same time. The only, you know, the major way that I consumed music was you put the needle down.
Yeah.
And
let
the album play. And,
yeah.
And that's just, I have the sense that that's so different.
I do have a vinyl.
You do?
I have a record player. I've got some vinyls. I've got Duran Duran's on there right now.
Oh, my.
Yeah. But anyways, the apps we were just talking about. So, like I said, the last song Olivia was listening to was Duvet by Boa. Yep.
That's great.
And I can, like, react to it with anything. But anyways, that is called Airbuds. And then the other app is called Superfan. Yeah. Superfan. But I don't know. I think it's really... The last thing me and Olivia do is I made a notes app, and I have, like, different questions in that app for for me to live in an answer, but only with music. So I think the last one we did was five songs that remind you of spring. And so we each give five songs, and we listen to those five songs at the exact same time.
Yeah, I couldn't love that more.
And it's really nice way to for us to connect, because I see spring differently than she sees it.
Sure.
And I see exactly how she sees it through the music that she listens.
This sounds like something that will be an assignment in senior English very soon.
There we go. Yeah, I'm helping you guys out.
That's what that sounds like. Mm-hmm. So one of the other things that I think is a part of this, you know, I mentioned the albums, and then of course for me it was cassette tapes and mm-hmm. and then, you know, the CDs. But so I have a son who is in the music industry, Davis Keats, and this last year he put out an album, but there's no physical album yet, and not sure that there will be. He didn't press any CDs or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so the only way to access his music is streaming services, right? The challenge there is, again, he's an artist trying to make a living as a musician, but do you know anyone who pays for streaming? Because I don't. And so it's really interesting. Now, you might pay for a streaming service, mm-hmm. right? Like, you might pay a monthly charge, but mm-hmm. that monthly charge doesn't go to the people that made the music.
Yeah.
That goes to, I mean, Apple,
yeah.
right? Maybe the Apple, but or Spotify or that sort of thing. But that money's not making its way to the artist.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I feel like there's this place that, and I admit looking on the outside in, but it feels to me like there's a disconnect when I purchased a cassette or a CD. I had this tangible physical thing. It had liner notes inside. It had a picture of the band inside.
Stickers.
It had the lyrics inside. I knew who all the artists were. I knew who the producer was. I knew who all of those sorts of things were. I knew mm-hmm. the recording studio where they did it and that sort of thing. And I also knew I was helping them
yeah.
make a living as an artist. It feels to me like that's gone.
I disagree.
Really?
I think there's a lot of reasons why I buy physical media, and it's because I feel like I connect with it more.
So, but you're saying that you go out of your way to buy the physical things rather than just streaming.
Absolutely. Like,
do you think that's common? Maybe I'm wrong about your whole generation. Do you think you're indicative of your peers? Are your peers doing the same thing?
I doubt. I think there's a special group of people who enjoy things at a higher level, but also, that's not true though, because I'm sure a lot of the guys, like, I don't know, if you like rap music, you'll buy posters of the artist.
So there's merchandising that is mm-hmm. a part
other
of the
than
connection.
The media,
connection.
Or like other than the music.
That's interesting.
Dude, Owen Rooney is probably sitting out there with a Tupac shirt on right now. There we go.
that's interesting.
But I think there's an important.
So you're saying that you do think that, and again, I think understand that right now you represent a group of people that is that you may or may not be typical within that group. But I find it encouraging that you are aware that there is a way that you can connect and in some respects need to connect to the artists you appreciate for them to continue making their
art.
Yeah,
exactly. So one thing that's gotten really popular with me and my friends is we really enjoy these underground shows. I mean, we go to as many as we can. There's one this Saturday that we're going to try and go to if I can get out of work. But these bands are, sometimes they'll be traveling bands, but sometimes usually they're local artists and bands that get together and they play. And they'll bring their merch. So they'll bring shirts, they'll bring CDs, they'll bring vinyls, cassettes even, yeah?
I think so,
stickers,
yeah.
Posters. It depends. It varies depending on if they're like, I don't know, someone came from
Philadelphia
that had so much stuff. I think I bought a shirt. Olivia bought a CD. But it's a really good way to support them, especially if they're traveling, because we always give tips at the front when you go in for gas money for all the bands and artists and stuff like that, and then you can go in and buy more from them, so they're making money from these shows.
Man, I find that so encouraging, and if your generation ushered in a new return to the live music scene, that would be so cool. I would think that would be really, really awesome. I would see that as a sign that maybe I shouldn't give up on humanity as a whole, which would be really cool.
Incorrigible. Thank you. I think that's like another reason why we go, is because I want to keep these kind of events alive. And I think the best way to enjoy the music I love is by seeing it in person. There's no comparison. My car isn't doing it justice. I need to be there in the presence of the artist.
And man, I think that's fantastic.
It's a good way to show support.
I love that. Okay. I think that's a great place for us to stop. Sophie, I think we're going to do this again. Seth and Sophie talk about stuff. But, yeah, that was really good. And I appreciate your thoughts. And I'm left with some hope, because I love the idea that DJ has put a flow chart of how artists might continue to make a living, which I really appreciate. He's put a flow chart up there. But this was super fun. And again, I love any time I leave a conversation and I'm left with some encouragement about the arts, which are so important to me, and the way we continue to interact with art. So, Sophie, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye.